From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play. Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space! And I'm about to die!
You need an opening.
Found one!
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. In this episode of Rebels Reactions, we are discussing Legends of Lasadas. Of course, a heavy Zeb episode for the season. Great episode, gives a lot of background into Zeb and his character and who he is and why he is the way he is. And join me for this discussion tonight, my friend and Coffee with Kenobi listener, David Motters. David, how are you doing?
Really good. Really good to be with you tonight.
Excellent. It's great to have you. I'm so happy you're able to join us tonight. And we will go to have some great time about this this episode. I mean, overall, it was a very intense, a little slower episode than some of the others. But it gives us a lot of background. We see a lot of growth coming through the show at this point for Zeb, which is someone we've needed to see some more depth on through these two seasons. So overall, what did you think of Legends of Lasadas?
Yeah, you know, after I watched this episode, the biggest thought I had was, this is why I watch Star Wars. This is why when I was 8 years old in 1977, I watched Episode 4 in the theater 10 times. It's the only movie I've ever seen in double digits at the theater, even to this time. I've seen The Force Awakens 5 times in the theater, but the original Episode 4 10 times. And I thought about it, you know, just like with this episode and even Episode 4 in 1977, was I was in awe of that something bigger than all of us. It's a mythology, and this episode really furthered the mythology of the Force through the history of the Lasadas. And another thing I was thinking, Aaron, is how, you know, I was looking back at all the episodes from Episode 1 and 2, or from Seasons 1 and 2 of Rebels, and really Spark of Rebellion struck me, and Path of the Jedi, as really exploring Star Wars mythology. And so when I saw this episode and really had that kind of experience again of Zeb looking to something bigger than him, I loved it, and was looking forward to talking about this with you.
Oh, absolutely. And the mythology of Star Wars is, we could spend hours discussing. There's so much in-depth mythology, and I think that's what's kept people coming back, is they created such a real-life mythology through the movies, and of course they carried it into Clone Wars, and of course now Rebels, and it's just made a human impact. It's made that connection with people, and that's what's made the show great, and that's what's makes this episode great, because we start off with, you know, the Ghost just on a standard mission, going through, flying in, landing up, and they wind up meeting up with Clone Wars' favorite, Hondo Ohnaka, Right. Everybody's sleazy pirate. What if you run against a scoundrel, he's the one you're going to get.
I was so happy when I saw him.
Yeah, it was very nice. When they brought him back a couple episodes ago, I was thrilled about that. And I'm glad they're continuing to use him. And of course, you see his sleazy. He's Hondo. He's still looking out for Numero Uno, which is Hondo. That throughout the episode as he's not only double-crossing Ezra, but he's double-crossing the Imperials as well. And he double-crossed the Lasats that he had. Of course, that's the whole reason the crew is theirs to is because they received a message from Hondo to help rescue these Lasats who were being held. Of course, the elderly Chava the Wise, and of course, the bigger Groan, who we find out was in the Honor Guard with Zeb.
Yeah, and served under him.
Absolutely, because we get a big glimpse into Zeb's background at this point, finding out that not only was he in the Honor Guard, which we all knew, but he was even more than that. He was the captain of the Honor Guard, one of the most respected military leaders, apparently, on the Lasat homeworld. Because then that begs the questions of what happened at that point. Why has he never brought it up before? Because even Hera's like, he never told any of us this. It was caught everybody off guard.
Oh, yeah. I really liked that when Hera said that. She said it very quietly, very sincerely. And it does set the stage for later on when Zeb does open up and talk about that with Ezra. It's really nice how it sets the stage here right in the first couple minutes.
Oh, yeah. And it sets it nicely because it keeps that theme going. You see, of course, first Zeb is he's shocked that he's seeing his people. Then he realizes who they are and how he knows them. And then it's almost like he's behaving like a scolded child for a moment. And then he's almost annoyed by their presence as we go throughout the episode. And a lot of that has to do with what happened in his final days on his home planet. And of course, he goes into that a little later in the episode when he's sitting down with Ezra. But we get a lot of comedic elements in this episode here, right here at the beginning. All because of Hondo. I think that was the main reason we have Hondo in this episode is to lighten the mood a little bit. If it wasn't, this would be a very heavy episode. So we have him bartering with stormtroopers, telling them where the rebels have gone. And of course, double-crossing the stormtroopers and closing the blast doors on him to give the rebels a chance to escape. Well, then, of course, he's captured. And, of course, he's taken to Kallus, who, of course, he's like, hey, I have this tracking device. Let's find him. So, it's again, he's looking out for Numero Uno, which, I mean, he's a pirate. You can't blame him. That's how he survived the Clone Wars. That's why he's still around, obviously. It's because of that.
Well, you remember that scene, Aaron, where once he closes the blast doors, then it was very interesting that one stormtrooper says, hold it right there. And I had to look and see, and I think that's Dave Filoni at that point, just looking at the credits at the end. But then Hondo has the classic line, well, this looks incriminating. And they cut from there, and I just thought Jim Cummings as Hondo is – he's just classic. The guy is so talented. And I was just laughing as they quickly cut away from that scene. But absolutely, they've got to have this comedic element because it is. It's a heavier episode. And like you and I were just saying, the mythology can be heavier.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing that comes out through all this comedic, through the comedic escape, pretty much, if you want to call it that, is apparently the other Lasat who have survived have changed their ways. Of course, all we've known of the Lasat is what we've learned from Zeb through his character through the first season and in the first half of this season, where I mean, they are a warrior race. And I mean, of course, just so you know, I always have the episode on in the background, so I got it on right now.
Yeah.
And
one
thing I'd absolutely love before Hondo starts, the rebels are trapped. They got stormtroopers all around them in these corridors, and all of a sudden you look down the hallway past the stormtroopers and you see little Hondo kind of sneaking past them.
Yes.
Then you see him sneaking back by. Then you see him sneak by again. Then all the doors close. So it's that little comedic element that suppresses air, which got me completely off point when I just saw him walk through the screen. But we find out that the surviving Lasat outside of Zeb don't embrace their warrior ways anymore. Because when they were being pinned down, they took, you know, Sabine took a couple of the blasters and says, "We have backup," and tossed them to Gron, who served under Zeb as the honor guard. He was a soldier, and he said he refused to fight. He says, "No, we don't fight anymore. It's not our way." And that almost infuriated Zeb, because Zeb pinned him to the ground at that point. Of course, he did it out of, you know, trying to protect him from blaster bolts, but it was still a very, "What are you doing?"
Right.
moment for him.
Yeah, Zeb says, "Of course you fight," you know. You know, like you said, there's a bit of comedy there when Sabine does throw the two blasters and hits Gron. But then it gets serious again real fast, because they're getting pinned down and Zeb is just thinking, "What is going on with you?"
Oh, yeah. It's one of these situations there that they wind up fighting their way through, and eventually they make it back to the ship. And of course, that's when we first see Ezra, and up to this point, Ezra and Kanan hadn't even touched their lightsabers. But once they get to the ship, that's when the lightsabers come out, and that's when we see them start to defend the rest of the crew as they're boarding the ship and backing up, blocking the blaster bolts with their sabers as the ghost departs.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, we find out that the Lasat, that Chava the Wise, as she's called, her and, of course, Gron are on a mission to find Lirasan, which was, we are discussing myths before we started here at the beginning of the show, was a myth from the Lasat homeworld of another planet for the Lasat. And they have this whole prophecy of the three, the warrior, the child, and the fool, who actually will lead them, because of those three, will lead them to Lirasan. And of course, that's their goal. And of course, Zeb's out of it at this point. His faith is gone. He's seen his people slaughtered. He's seen everything the Empire's done. So he's writing it off as strictly a myth at that point. And a lot of that because of his lost ways.
Yeah, I really like how you said that. In fact, just looking at notes, you know, I did that as well. I watched the episode four times, and just like you said, he does. Zeb calls it a myth, an old legend, and it's interesting to hear him say that when, of course, you and I have been talking about how important myth is, and I like that you said that he's been beaten down, and he's really negative about this. And really the whole time, I put a note to myself here that Ezra's willing and Zeb is resistant. And there's several other parts here you'll see, and you and I've seen it, where it's Ezra, kind of the younger brother, helping the older brother. When Zeb is struggling, there's two to three different times where Ezra really picks him up. And it's really nice to see that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you couldn't have said it any better. It was right on point because we see Ezra encouraging Zeb. We see him when he walks off, when they're starting the chant to figure out where the new planet is to start the rituals, we see Zeb kind of get annoyed and storm out and go to his quarters and start pacing around. And it's not Kanan who was standing there watching. It wasn't Hera, the mother figure. It was Ezra who gets up, follows him out, goes in there, and he's like, "What's going on?" And he's like, "These are your people. You're acting like you're annoyed by them." And this is where we find out what truly is bothering Zeb. We find out that, yes, he was the he admits he was the captain of the Honor Guard. His job was to defend the royal family and defend Lasan. And he failed. And they all fought valiantly, and they held the palace. They held the royal palace. But then somebody bombed it. And he said when he woke up, it was gone. Everything was gone. He failed. And if it wasn't for Kanan, he'd have been dead. And so he feels he failed his people. He's failed as captain. He doesn't deserve to be called captain because of that failure. And it's Ezra who sits there and looks at him and goes, "But you have a chance to help your people again. Don't fail them this time." And that changes you see his eyes just kind of perk up, and he's like, "Oh my God, you're right."
Yeah.
I have a responsibility still to these people.
Yeah. I was going to say right there that this is huge. And you know, I thought of a couple of things that I wanted to share with you in this very section of the episode. There's a couple of things. One is, I'm a clinical psychologist during the day and Star Wars fan here, at other times. But one of the biggest things that I think about, particularly when Ezra goes to help Zeb here with the feelings of guilt, and this is a very common thing I deal with every day, and I have a lot of people that I work with who feel a ton of guilt, and they really shouldn't. I mean, of course, I want people to feel guilt if they've purposely set out to hurt someone. But when I explain to people, "Have you purposely set out to hurt other people?" And they're like, "Well, no." And then I said, "Well, those are the persons I want to feel guilty." And that's a big thing to take that off of people. Again, the important thing is to feel guilt if we should, to not feel it if we shouldn't. And so here's, Zeb, and I thought about this situation just as you described it. And here he is trying his best, and Zeb didn't purposely set out to fail his people when the attack came from the Empire. He didn't, and so that's why, he's a perfect example of where he's carrying all this guilt, and he really shouldn't be. And Dave Filoni talks about that a bit in Rebels Recon, but there's that part, and the other part that I was curious to see what you thought about too. And talking about the mythology, is there's always that, what is it that Joseph Campbell says, you resist the call, and then you accept it. And just like you said, Aaron, here he is saying, "Gosh, you're right, Ezra, I can do something to help my people." And he starts to accept that call to the hero's journey.
Exactly. And we see that play out through the remainder of the episode, because not only does he answer that call, he realizes that call is still there on him. Just because that happened to the planet, his people survived, and he still has a responsibility to them. And he steps forth, and you see almost the rebirth of his faith at that point, because he steps into the role that they're wanting him to play at that point, to help guide them to where they need to go, because that's when he comes out, and that's when we see this bow rifle that he's been carrying through all the first season and through each episode. That's his go-to blaster, is that bow rifle, and they tell him to use it as the ancients did. And next thing you know, we see this transform into this phenomenally awesome staff. He just starts clicking here, twisting there. Next thing we know, it's literally a staff. Very, to me, very reminiscent of a Triton almost at that point. And when his staff touches I just blanked on her name.
Chavas,
yes. Chavas' staff. It showed them where the planet they were going is. It showed them where Lyra's son was. So he stepped into that role. And, of course, they began traveling to where they need to go. And that's when they find out, of course, they hit a roadblock.
Oh, yes. The imploded star cluster.
The imploded star cluster. The largest one Hera has ever seen, too.
Right. Sabine adds, it's the worst space anomaly ever.
Exactly. It doesn't get much worse than that, apparently. Exactly. I'm not a space traveling person, but if I'll take their word for it, because it looks pretty wicked. But the artwork, though. If you just sit back and look at the artwork that they did for this collapsed star cluster, it looked like they were flying into a painting. You could almost see the brush strokes. I mean, it literally looks like a painting, and it's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous, the animation in this show is.
Oh, this is. When I saw this, in you know, the other part too is not only this, like you said, this imploded star cluster, and when they show it from a couple of different angles, but they pull in that music too that is just so perfect. It's ethereal, it's serious, it's powerful, it's mythological. The music they pick, it's just unbelievable.
Oh, Kevin Kiner did the orchestrator did phenomenal for this episode with the silent the violin solos, the violin music through this whole scene when they get to the star cluster. That it sets the attitude, it sets the mood that really we have don't see a lot of throughout Star Wars. We get moments of depth and of magic, but we never really get this, you know, support structure where the music just comes in and music always adds to it. But the music for this part made the scene in my look, because that violin just really pulled it together.
You nailed it. That violins, you can hear them. And you just watch like the visuals that they did, right, Aaron, when you look at it after watching the episode several times, you'll see little almost like comets or asteroids being sucked in to that imploded star cluster, and the music is playing, and then they'll pan behind the ghost and you're looking directly into it. Then they'll show you that side view of the ghost and how big the opening is. It's just staggering. And this
you hear it?
Do you have it in the back?
I have it in the back, yeah. Oh. It's actually playing straight off the StarWars.com website. They actually have the audio cue there.
Right. In the episode guide, yep, they give you the visual. I played that several times just to hear it.
And just that intense violin. Makes the scene. You can play that all day.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying this part fits in perfectly again with the mythology, things that are bigger than us. And this is what they're faced with, right? Something that is staggeringly bigger than them. And the issue becomes, what are they going to do about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And one thing we've kind of grazed over when we were going through the episode, up to this point is we've talked about all the ceremony and the rituals they were doing to help find the planet, but one thing they kept referring to, especially Chava, we kept referring to Ashla, and mm-hmm. Ashla guiding them. And of course, Kanan then references, she's explaining that what Ashla is to Ezra. And Ezra's like, that's sounds like the Force. And then Kanan speaks up and he's like, you know, the Force goes by many different names. So then we see the expansion of the Force mythology through this, that there are other cultures with deep, deep ties to the Force outside of the Jedi and the Sith. And we see this prime example right here with the Lasat, and they call it the Ashla at this point, but using that to guide their way and using that to guide what happens. Because as they're flying through the cluster, the exploded star cluster, Zeb's got his staff. He's got it expanded out the way it's supposed to, and he slams it into the console, and the lightning bolts come out of it and everything, and it starts flying. The Ashla, or the Force, begins flying the ship. And you see what really got to me and really took notice was when that's happening, you see Kanan and Ezra look at each other. And next thing you know, they extend their hands and place it on Zeb's back, almost like they're trying to channel the Force through him to get where they're needing to go.
Yeah, I really noticed that. In fact, I wanted to talk with you about that on this episode, that it's almost like the two persons with Force abilities, they're the two that do it, that they're the ones that put their hands on Zeb. And it was just, for me, seeing them do that, again, it's that original awe and feeling from 1977 and being able to see, you know, episode 4, A New Hope, in the theater, and just being 8 years old and just being just awestruck with the whole process. And when they put their hands on him, it was moving. It was so neat to see them. And it goes back to that family thing that Simon Kinberg and Dave Filoni always talk about, that this really is a family, and here's two of them just really supporting him. But again, I thought it was interesting that the two with the Force abilities, I like how you said it, they're helping him channel the Force.
Oh, absolutely. It brings a whole new perspective to Force and Force wielders and everything as we go through, because there's always been the question of people having Force, being Force sensitive and Force abilities, and they had, for the longest time, everybody was like, they had to be Jedi or they had to be Sith. Well, obviously they don't, because we have the Lasat sitting here. We have the Inquisitors are Force sensitive, and they can wield the Force in certain ways, but they're not Sith. That's straight from the story group. They're not Sith. They're just Force sensitive Inquisitors. So we're beginning to see the Force isn't just for the Jedi and the Sith. It's expanded. There's power in every culture. We're beginning to see at some point, at some level.
Yeah, that's, you know, I know that you and I always watch Rebels Recon after, at some point, you know, after the episode, when you go through it, and this one, they had Pablo and Dave Filoni, Henry Gilroy, and all them. And Pablo does say that, right? He says the Force is not exclusive to the Jedi and the Sith. And even Gilroy kind of finishes up Rebels Recon saying that there's all these species and planets that might have different interpretations and different understandings, and how they interact with the Force is different. So here's Gilroy working with Filoni and Pablo Hidalgo to really expand this mythology. Again, that's why this episode is in my wheelhouse, because it's just expanding that mythology that I've been so fascinated with.
This, and they did a phenomenal job expanding it too. This is one of those episodes where if it wasn't for the storyline itself, whereas the story in and of itself, okay, but it was the depth they brought into the additional characters, the depth they brought into Zeb's character, the expansion of the Force mythology itself. That's what made this episode so good at that point, is the expansion of everything that we've known about, and the insight that it's given us. And that's by far what blew me away the most about this episode. Because when I first watched it, I was like, okay. But then the more I watched it, the more I watched it over and over again, I'm like, man, I missed that. that's deep. I really miss that. And the more it's grown on me, and it's definitely a phenomenal episode because they give us, there's so much packed into these episodes. You can't watch them once and catch everything. Oh, you have to watch them multiple times.
Oh gosh. You nailed it. In fact, you know, as you're saying it, I was just thinking about a couple of things. Like you said, we went through the episode here. A couple of things, like you said, that you miss and you go back and you watch it. You're like, oh my gosh. And like you said, deeper depths on it. Here's a couple. And I wondered what you thought about this. You mentioned that they start doing the chanting on the ghost. And then Chava the Wise asks Chopper, or she asks for the map. And then Chopper puts the map out there, right? And the first thing I thought about was the Force Awakens, when BB-8 shows Han Solo the map that he's carrying, you know, the kind of that, you know, spread out kind of Milky Way looking or galaxy looking mm-hmm. bluish orbs, you know, which represent planets. And I just thought, man, it just so reminds me of that scene of Han Solo talking to Rey and to Finn on the Millennium Falcon. And the other one, like you said, I had to watch it a couple times, is after they go through that imploded star cluster and they come out the other end, there's just some really neat little details that you see. Like, for example, the outside of the ghost, you see a few little flickers of electricity on the outside of the ghost. And then you go inside and you see a few little flickers on Zeb himself as he's laying on the front of the console of the ghost. And he stands up and he's okay. And he says, quote, "I've never seen better." And then he says, "We're home." And you know who said that?
Oh, of course.
That goes, you know,
Chewie, we're home.
And I just thought, you know, it was such a neat tie-in too, because, you know, the other thing I thought about, Aaron, was here's Zeb saying that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but when you look at some of the old original artwork by Ralph McQuarrie, some of the original drawings he did for Chewie, I think they use those to create Zeb, right?
Kind of that's true, yes.
That design. So it's so interesting to kind of see that tie that, you know, kind of Zeb is based off the stuff of Chewie. Han says, "Chewie, we're home." And then here's Dave Filoni and Henry Gilroy putting it right in the episode, "We're home." So I thought that tie-in, or I guess what, call back to...
It's definitely a tribute, definitely a throw out there to The Force Awakens. We've had a couple of those in the last few episodes, especially with, of course, the one of their first episode of the new year after Force Awakens came out was involving Princess Leia. Then we got this little throwback here in the sentence. So definitely they're making the connection. They want people to make that crossover.
Definitely. A few other neat things. I don't know if you noticed this. I'm sure you did because you and I watched these multiple times. But at the very end of the episode, you see Ezra and Kanan on the bridge of the ghost. And you can tell Ezra's a little worried. He's like, you know, kind of wondering, you know, if his brother's going to come back. And Kanan puts him at ease. And then the next thing you see is the Phantom flying up and coming close to the ghost to dock and stuff. And I thought that was really neat, again, to see Ezra's concern for Zeb throughout the episode, all the way to the very end.
Oh, yeah. They are the quintessential brothers at this point. I mean, they have that. They care for each other tremendously, but they get on each other's nerves like two brothers will. They will fuss. They will fight. They will. If given the opportunity, they will beat the snot out of each other, I'm sure. but they would be the first to sacrifice themselves for the other. And of course, you know, they don't want him to leave. I mean, Ezra doesn't want him to leave. I'm sure if he decided to have stayed on Lasan, he would have supported the idea. But not necessarily something he would have wanted him to do.
Oh, agreed. Just like you said, it's so neat to see from season one into season two, how much they are growing as a family. And I do really like how they definitely both are looking out for each other, Ezra and Zeb.
Oh, absolutely. And they make sure to watch out for each other. I mean, they even still, even though they're watching out for each other, they still pick on each other. And we see that in this episode where when they're talking about the prophecy and Zeb, they're talking about the child, the fool, and the warrior. And of course, Zeb automatically assumes he's the warrior. And she points out, no, you're not the warrior. And he's like, I don't want to be the kid. I want to be the warrior. And of course, you see Ezra just kind of turn his head and look at him like, well, you're kind of acting like a kid.
Exactly. I was going to talk to you about that. I love that. It just, you gotta rib your brother, right?
Absolutely. Especially when you're right.
Exactly. You gotta give him grief.
Hey, it's Dan Z
and Corey Club
from Coffee with Kenobi, and we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Toward them, when they first go in the back of the Ghost to start working on the ceremony and the rituals they got to do to find Lirasan, Chava walks into the back room behind Chopper, and Chopper whistles and tweets something, and she's like, "I'm not weird." randomness.
Chopper is not going to let anything lie. I keep thinking about, some of the stuff that, you've talked about in previous Rebels reactions and how, it's such a difficult process that Dave Filoni and these creators have to do, that it is a cartoon, it is a children's show. At the same time, there's us Star Wars fans who have been watching it forever and look at the deepest stuff in it. At the same time, I thought about that comment from Chopper to Chava the Wise, and when she does say that I'm not weird, I thought that was just, to really get the kids laughing. Of course, I'm a big kid, so I'm cracking up as Chopper's giving her grief.
Oh, yeah. Especially, and I think it kind of caught Chopper off guard, too, because I think he was making the comment to Ezra, is what he was meaning to make, to not thinking that she would understand. Because not everybody understands the droid and that's how they talk. So I was taking it as like, he was making an offhand comment to his friend, to Ezra, and she understood. And she's like, hey, now, I can't tell you how many times I've done that to people. A lot of people you've seen, you know me. You wouldn't believe I speak fluent Spanish, but I do. And I can't tell you how many times I grew up, all through college and everything, I worked retail. I can't tell you how many times that benefited me. Because I honestly, pull up coffeewithkenobi.com if you're listening. Pull it up, look at my picture. I don't look like I speak Spanish.
Now you want me to
but
be.
But I do.
Yeah, I want to be bilingual now.
Exactly. There's a lot of benefit to it. Yo puedo hablar español muy bien. Yo voy a hacerlo cuando quiero. And a lot of people just, it got me in trouble in college. That's another story for another time, though. But, it happens. And I think that was the situation Chopper was in at that point. But it still did take away from how funny it was.
Did you... You see the funny stuff, like you mentioned, at the beginning of the episode, they have the humor with Hondo just to kind of lighten it a bit. At the very end of the episode, there's those two different times where Chopper is interacting, I think, with Sabine and with Hera, and the first thing is Chopper's mad. He has to put Zeb's stuff back in his bunk, and then Chopper's upset that there's more of Zeb's kind, and so he's just disappointed in both ways.
Oh yeah, yes, Chopper, that means there's more of him. Oh yeah, yeah. Throughout this series, and Force Awakens, and of course the original trilogies, and of course Clone Wars, Chopper has become my favorite. Out of any droid you have in any movie, any episode, I like BB-8. BB-8's cool. R2's always been will always be one of my favorites. But there's just something about Chopper that appeals to me. He's run down. He's beat up. And I said this on the last episode when I was, or not the last episode, but an episode or two ago when I was talking to James Howell. And he reminds me a lot of Walter from Jeff Dunham's Puppets. That crotchety old smart aleck. And we see that a lot come through. Chopper by far is my favorite.
Well, I've heard, you and I try to stay in touch with the Star Wars universe and what other people are saying. I've heard a number of people call Chopper a homicidal astromech.
I can see that.
You know, the body count for this droid is incredible when you look at season one and season two. Even what episode was it where he knocks the one Imperial droid out and lands on Lothal it didn't end up killing that or destroying that droid, but Chopper, I think about the number of stormtroopers that have flown out into space. He meets criteria for a homicidal astromech, but he has just got the best personality and quite frankly says it like it is.
And the best thing I've ever seen him do, and we're going on a Chopper rant here, which is fine. It's Rebels. We can go on a Chopper rant all as much as we want. The best thing I've ever seen Chopper do was in Blood Sisters when he is sitting on top of the other ship. And he's just dismantling the gun. He pulls out a piece, looks at it, and tosses it over his shoulder. He's just dismantling the other girl's weapons on her ship, just like it's nothing. He's just grabbing and tossing. He grabs it, looks at it, goes, "Oh, okay, that looks good. Toss it."
Yeah, when you talked about that in that Rebels reaction, I I've watched that episode a number of times. It is so hilarious, and the way they animated it, he's just. I guess an old saying, he's stirring the pot. He's so funny in that scene. And, exactly. When you said it, I immediately remember that scene. And, I think that's for, Ketsu's, right? Her ship.
Yes.
Dismantles that pretty quickly. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So we definitely got a winner here with Chopper. So, but overall, this was a great episode, and they wind up at Lirasan, and we find out there's all the Lirasan was originally the Lasat's homeworld, where they originated before they went out into the galaxy, and it ends up with a nice closure. The only thing a couple things we don't get answered. We don't know. Of course, I'd have liked to have seen the planet with the Lasat on there. That would have been awesome.
Oh, yes.
Hopefully we'll see that in the future. Hondo is still in Imperial custody. He's on board Kallus' ship. So how does, what happens to Hondo? Those are questions we would want answered. The main thing is we see a different Zeb at the end of this episode. Because there, as they're getting ready to leave, they're trying to figure out where to go, how they get home. And she's, Hera goes, you know, this is a charted system now. Since we've been here, the ghost knows where it is. We can get, come back anytime. And he's like, oh, I got a job now, and we'll go out. And he goes, if I find other Lasat, I can guide them home. He now, he's found purpose again. His faith has been restored. He's found more beyond outside of fighting the Empire, a true purpose of being. And we see that in his, in the way this episode ends.
Oh, yes. And in fact, you know, to piggyback on what you're saying, you know, you see him smile. And I go back to that Rebels recon with Dave Filoni talking, and he addresses this a bit with, well, both him and Pablo Hidalgo do. Dave Filoni says that for Zeb, it is a matter of faith, and that he has more of a balance now, and that in essence, he doesn't have to carry that burden of being the last Lasat alive. And so Filoni talked about that. Pablo, if you remember in the Rebels recon, talks about how, you can not only see where he comes from, but also that there's hope for Zeb. And even if, you know, Pablo said there's a future and even the possibility of a happy ending for Zeb. And I thought that was really neat that Pablo said that.
Oh, absolutely. And we see that through this episode. There can be a happy ending for him. There is somewhere he can go. He has a home now. It's not just fighting the people who destroyed his home. He has a home again. And which, you know, it's one thing fighting for your family on board your ship, but when you now have a home to defend as well, it brings a whole new package to the ball game. So.
Oh, I'm definitely happy for Zeb. It's neat. It's neat. Like you said, he's got purpose. He started the hero's journey. He really was, you know, such a good guy prior to that. But like you and I said, this whole mythology, you see Zeb, you know, taking really this hero's journey and has the purpose now. And we'll probably see it play out in some future episodes.
Oh, absolutely. And I definitely am looking forward to that as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that, of course, is pretty much it, the legends of Lasat at that point. Any final thoughts about this episode? Any final comments?
Yeah. I was just thinking, these episodes, in particular, this one, is why I love Star Wars. It's why I watch Rebels. It's why I watch the Clone Wars. Why I read the books. It's the mythology. It's the hero's journey. These character arcs, and we're really seeing these. Like I said, you've covered it, you know, a lot of Ezra's in these last couple of episodes here prior to this one. And in this episode, we absolutely see Zeb's growth as a character and as a hero. And you know, one of the things I thought about just as a final thought, and you mentioned it, and I know we can't take forever on it, but just very briefly, it's really neat to see. Like you said, he has that bow rifle, and he brings it up to the main bridge, and he uses it to guide the ghost through that imploded star cluster, and he says to Hera, he says, "Trust me, Hera." And one of the things that I flashed back to again was Luke turning off his targeting computer right in the trench run in episode 4, and Ben Kenobi says to him, "Trust the Force, Luke." And here's Zeb saying, "Trust me, Hera." And in both instances, you got, you know, our heroes are in spaceships, but they look to something bigger to get them through, right? Luke gets the Force, helps him blow up the Death Star. Here's Zeb using the Force as well to help them get through something that, you know, obviously the Imperials can't take even their Star Destroyer through. So it's neat to see the parallels, and you've heard me say it throughout this episode, between episode 4 and this particular Rebels episode. But, you know, those were the kind of the final comments I wanted to make. And I think it's so neat how they really laid this episode out.
And you're very right. They did a great comparison there. His guiding, telling Hera to just trust him as he use that staff and use the Force to guide them through the danger at that point. I mean, he even said at some point when, I mean, you can't, I mean, he was, you're looking at the same picture everybody else is. The only difference is he's got his staff, he's got the Force flowing, and he even says at some point, I see the way.
Oh, yes.
I see the path.
That was awesome.
And next thing you know, with nobody touching anything, you hear Hera say, the hyperdrive's coming on. How's that happening? Nobody's controlling the ship. The Force is controlling the ship at that point. And it takes it, it makes that jump and takes it through the imploded star cluster to Lirasan, to the promised land where they're trying to get.
Well, right. And Luke, when he blows up the Death Star, that's the promised land, you know?
Exactly. That,
yeah. Yeah. Like I said, and there's so many parallels, and they really, really, really nailed it with doing those. And again, just an incredible episode.
It really was. It really was. The more I watched it, the more I was able to pull from it, and I really enjoyed this episode. Going through it with the growth of. In the background of Zeb through this whole episode. You bring back Hondo. That's always a plus in any regards to any episode when you bring back somebody from the Clone Wars. So we had Hondo show up in this, and of course in his typical Hondo fashions. Then we just had a complete expanded mythology on the Force. And that just is expanding everybody's understanding. I mean, it's one thing I've noticed through everything that we've watched from the original trilogy, going into the prequels, going into Clone Wars. There's every series has something that tries to, even Force Awakens has something to try to expand our understanding of the Force and of what it is and what it's capable of doing and how it works. And we see that in the original trilogy with the introduction to the Force. That's how we found out about the Force. And then, of course, in the Clone Wars, we see, or in the prequels, we find out about these midichlorians and everything, which they're trying to drop and, you know, not mention anymore, but they're there. They're canon. They're in the movies. It's canon. So the midichlorians even exist at that point in helping generate and bind the Force around people. Then you have the Clone Wars, and just to grow through the Force in that movie or through that series and trying to understand how, I don't know if you remember the Mortis trilogy from the Clone Wars.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
The father, the son, and the daughter. The father is the buffer between the son, who's the dark side, and the daughter, who's the light, and how that measures into the galaxy at that point. And then we find out here in Rebels, the Force isn't limited to the Jedi. It's not limited to the Sith. There are other cultures who embrace the Force and use the Force for what it is. And so each series, each movie, every trilogy, every series has done something to expand the depth of the Force, our understanding of the Force, and help continue to build that mythology. And when you can grow a mythology like that, and we're going to be seeing these shows and movies for the rest of our lives. My 3-year-old's going to be growing up on Star Wars. When she's 60, she's going to be seeing new movies probably at this point, as long as they continue to have this strong growth of not only characters, but strong growth of the myth.
That's it. It's like when you and I were talking to Dan down at Disney World, and one of the things Dan asked me was, you know, my thoughts on Star Wars, and I was talking to him a bit about it, and we said, you know, look at all of us talking about this many years later. Comes out in 1977. Many, you know, science fiction movies comes out. You know, they come out and they bomb. But I think ultimately the reason why, consistent with what you're saying, the reason why we're talking about this from 1977 to 2016, and just as you said, it's going to be beyond that, is because of the mythology within it. If you don't have the mythology within the Star Wars universe, it's, you know, maybe, you know, a number of these other science fiction shows that none of us talk about anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there have been some phenomenal series and shows and movies since Star Wars was released that just haven't gone anywhere because they don't. And they're phenomenal. I'll watch them time and time again, but they lack the mythology and they lack the appeal that Star Wars had. It was able to make that connection, and a lot of shows don't, unfortunately. And we see them thrive and then they die. They thrive and then they die.
Do you remember George Lucas on the red carpet for the world premiere there in Los Angeles? I was watching on StarWars.com, and Andy Gutierrez was asking him, you know, his thoughts about this, you know, just kind of looking around at the spectacle that Star Wars is. And Lucas said it. He says, look, there's a lot of science fiction movies that come out with spaceships and you know, blasters and lasers, but, you know, we don't talk about them anymore. And it's when he infused that work of Joseph Campbell, and he's, you know, Lucas has talked about it extensively. That was the ticket right there. Because when you look at some of the old scripts he had prior to infusing the mythology, I think you and I can safely say we wouldn't be talking about Star Wars today. But once he infused it, the hero's journey, we were off and running.
Oh, absolutely. And that mythology is what's kept this going for so long. And people have tried to duplicate it. They have tried hard. Most predominantly and most recently, James Cameron with Avatar. I mean, he came right out and said, I'm making the next Star Wars when he made that movie. And it did phenomenal. It was a great movie. What's it done since? Yes, they're supposedly making a sequel. Yes, they're redesigning half of Animal Kingdom to have Avatar Land. But really, what has come out of that property outside of that movie?
Well, you said it, virtually nothing. And just, you know, the follow-up to that is who's talking about it? And they're not. There's not this many podcasts about Avatar, you know, like there is for Star Wars. There's not, you know, TV series like the Clone Wars and Rebels. There's, you know, video games. Think about all the video games, all the novels. I mean, it's just, there's none of that for Avatar. There's not Avatar novels out there, I don't think. Maybe I could stand corrected, but
I'm actually Googling that right now to make sure. I was about to make that same statement, but I was like, you know, as soon as I say that, I'm going to wind up with 50 emails saying, hey, how about this one? Or how about this one?
Email Aaron, not me.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com, people. Shoot me an email. Let me know if it's out there.
Yeah.
So when I search Avatar books, all I get are like The Last Airbender, Avatar The Last Airbender, not actual Avatar, the movie type Avatar.
Yeah.
There's not the expanded universe or legends aren't out there for this. You never are going to have something that compares to Star Wars.
No, I don't see it happening.
I don't either.
I remember back in the summer, last summer, 2015, hearing some Star Wars fans who were big Marvel fans, and I really loved what they said, and they nailed it. They said, look, we love Marvel. We love the Avengers movies, even the individual ones, Captain America, Thor, etc. But those Star Wars fans said, there's still nothing like Star Wars. And, you know, they really had the hunch that at the box office, they would do better than, you know, these blockbuster Avenger movies, and The Force Awakens has. And what they said, what you and I, is we know it's true. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like Star Wars.
And there never will be. There never will be. It's a cultural phenomenon that I don't think can ever be duplicated at this point, without being called a copycat at that point.
Yeah.
But definitely it's unique and of its own.
Yeah.
Legends of L'Saat, a great episode. Oh, if you had to grade the episode, my friend, David, how would you grade Legends of L'Saat?
No hesitation on the scale of A, B, C, D, all that. It's an A+, no doubt.
I would have to grade it. It definitely is an A episode in my regard, because just the growth of everything in the episode, just how much we can glean from this episode is great and phenomenal. And it definitely made it a worthwhile one to enjoy. So with that, of course, we conclude Legends of L'Saat. David, thank you so much for joining me for this discussion and of this episode. If people want to reach out to you and talk to you about this or Star Wars or any other matters, what is the best way for somebody to get in contact with you?
Yeah, mine's on Twitter. It's David_Modders. The last name is MODDERS. Not T as in Tom, but D as in David.
Perfect. And of course, we'll have that in the show notes as well. So if you pull up the show notes at coffeewithkenobi.com, we'll have a link to his Twitter there. And of course, you can always tweet the show, because we now have our own Twitter. Well, it's late. We have our own Twitter for Rebels Reactions. It's at Rebels Reactions on Twitter. You can email the show, rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. Of course, you can find me on Twitter as well, at taharris121079. And of course, email me, of course, at aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. It all comes to me, so bring it on. Send us your thoughts, though. We want to know what you thought about Legends of L'Saat or any of the other episodes. If you feel we missed something, if there was a point that we wanted to, that you thought should have been made that we failed to bring up, email us. Let us know. We bring it up in a future episode and go from there. We definitely definitely want to hear from you and hear your thoughts as well. So definitely drop us a line, whether it be through Twitter or email, and we will definitely include that in a future show. David, thank you so much for joining me this evening. It was a great time. Well, definitely you're going to be back on with me in the future. I can guarantee that. It was a great night. Thank you so much. Thank you everybody for listening. My name is Aaron. This is Rebels Reactions on the Coffee with Kenobi Network. Remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre 1. I need a lift. This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play. Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.